Shapitzi Liang, the host of Fatal Attraction. I was just taking a nice, hot bath and listening to CJLO 1690 AM. Listening to CJLO is my favorite thing to do after a long, hard day of work.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. Two separate films made by Concordia alumni are making waves internationally this week. Miriam Joubert, a 2013 graduate from the Mel Hoppenheim School of Cinema, will be presenting her film Who Do I Belong To at the 74th Berlinale, one of the world's most prestigious film festivals. The film, which is Joubert's first feature, will be one of 20 competing for the Golden Bear, its highest honor. Another Concordia graduate, Vincent-René Lortie, will be competing in the Best Short Fiction Film category at the upcoming Academy Awards for his film Invisible. The 30-minute movie, about a teen struggle with mental health, is the fourth Quebec-made film in 6 years to be nominated in that category. The massive Northvolt battery plant project east of Montreal has been temporarily halted due to an act of sabotage. Workers discovered nails and metal bars inserted into hundreds of trees meant to be cleared as part of the preparation for construction. An anonymous group claiming responsibility for the vandalism posted their actions on social media, saying that the addition of the nails would damage chainsaws and other machinery while helping to slow down deforestation. Northvolt representatives claim that the act jeopardizes the safety of their workers while damaging and devaluing the trees. The $7 billion electric car battery plant will be located on a 170-hectare site in Saint-Basile-le-Grand and is set to be completed in 2026. Quebec's Health and Wellness Commissioner released the final report of the Aging Well at Home series this week. The study examines the performance of the province's home care and support services. Katie Brady has more.
Health and Wellness Commissioner Joanne Castonguay is worried about the state of home care in Quebec. The commission concluded a four-part series on aging well at home in a press conference Tuesday morning. Castonguay told reporters the current model is outdated and not well-equipped to serve the aging population. She says it's clear that Quebecers' first choice is to be treated at home whenever possible.
Il est nécessaire de favoriser une dynamique de changement vers un système de soins et de services de soutien à domicile qui soit adapté aux besoins et aux attentes des usagers, un système qui soit basé sur le maintien de l'autonomie.
Paul Brunet, director of Conseil pour la protection des malades, told CJLO it's time the province stop planning and start doing.
I'm fed up with strategies and global plans. I want action. People are suffering because they're not getting sufficient and adequate home care that they deserve. Can we work on that? Stop thinking, stop writing about strategies. Do the job. Render the appropriate services to our population.
Brene says the inaccessibility of home care can be felt by everyone who uses the health system.
We all know now that between 25 and 50% of people waiting in the emergency ward are elders who could have been seen and should be treated at home through adequate professional home care, including the visit of doctors.
The summary of the Commission's recommendations on home care can be found on its website, csbe.gov.qc.ca. In Montreal, for CJLO, I'm Katie Brady.
For more, visit CJLO 1690 AM podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
The world is sick. I'm sick.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Cadenza Montreal. I'm Stephanie Manning. We've got the first interview of the year here on Cadenza Montreal this Wednesday afternoon. And lots of exciting music to get into. So without further delay, the interviewee this week is Matthias Mauta. He's the artistic director of Ensemble Caprice here in Montreal, and he's also the head of the Bach Society of Minnesota in the U.S. I had the pleasure of speaking with him about his group's upcoming concert at Salle Bourgie this Sunday afternoon. And they also, the piece that they'll be performing, this Baroque opera, is also on a CD release that came out recently, just a few days ago. So before we get into that interview, I thought I would play a selection from that album. This was the pre-release that came out before, the pre-release single that came out before the album dropped just a couple days ago. So this is a comic baroque opera by Joseph Bourdon de Boismortier. And this is a version that has never been recorded before. It's from the original version, as Matthias Mauta will talk about in our interview, which will follow. So this is the Act One, Scene Four, the marching chorus of the Shepherds. So following this, we'll get to hear from my interview with Matthias Mauta from just a few days ago. So this is Ensemble Caprice, and the opera is called Don Quixote chez la Duchesse. Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CGLO 1690. I'm joined by Matthias Mauta, the artistic director of Ensemble Caprice. The group will be performing at Salle Borgie on Sunday, January 28th. They'll be presenting Don Quixote chez la Duchesse, or Don Quixote at the Duchess's House, a Baroque opera by French composer Joseph Bourdon de Boismortier. Matthias, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the concert description promises intrigue and comic chivalrous plot twists. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite amazing because we associate like Baroque opera is something like it's long and there are these convoluted stories. And this is quite opposite. So we are in France, mid 18th century. So at 1743 in Paris, this opera was performed. And it sort of had the background idea of being something like an anti-opera in almost like a satire, because back then the audience was used to the opera tragique, and so the tragédie en musique, so it was all about like these big chunks of often based on antiquity with legend and myths put onto stage and stretched out like for 2 or 3 hours. Here we have like a masterpiece like in 1 hour that throws short pieces at the audience includes a lot of humor, and that to a big degree attributed to the fact that Don Quixote, of course, it's not exactly a Greek hero, but it's a person, a person that is sort of totally out of context and not in sync with his own time, and he still up to this day is not in sync with his with also with our time. So that contrast between what the main characters represent and what the opera, the form of the opera is, creates just very funny situations. And it needs to be said that across the entire story, so Don Quixote tries to promote the idea of pure love with his dream, the Dulcinea, that he actually never sees or has never met, but it's his ideal. And at some point at the end, so he confirms his attachment to this ideal. And of course, we don't know, because no one has really seen the Dulcinea. Is it right or wrong? So it has actually that twist of not a very modern twist of not really just superficial or straightforward, because there's sort of a different layer in reality. And so, as often with humor, we have different layers, and that creates the particular twist of a story or an event. This opera is full of it.
Absolutely. And I read that the libretto is loosely based on the original novel, so there are some changes. Like, what do you sort of think of the changes that the librettist made to the original?
Well, I what I really like about it, that it's not an attempt to be authentic, like talking about an 18th century composer writing about an opera, about a book that has been published more than 100 years before, but to come up with own ideas and an own version, because that's very much what I like today, doing myself as a musician and with music from the past. So they came up with something very imaginative, fancy, and interesting. And I think Boismortier, who was 20 years older than Favart, the librettist, I think he got really intrigued by the talents of this young writer, who came up with ideas that would give plenty of musical ideas to Boismortier. And I think that needs to be underscored, and can't be underscored enough, that Boismortier, who is often associated with a composer that wrote nice music for amateur players in the 18th century, he felt himself challenged to do his very best. It turned out that Don Quixote, as a result, became a true masterpiece that is full of ideas that I remember. I did it once. I played in the orchestra years and years ago, and some of these melodies kept ringing my head for years to come. So it's just on that level, something that is very popular, at the same time witty and very skillfully crafted.
Right, yeah, and you talk about how, like, Boismortier wrote a lot for amateur musicians. I know that, like, in his music was really popular in his lifetime, and he was able to become rich without the aid of patrons. What do you think, like, draws people to his music in that way?
First of all, I have to say I'm full of admiration. It's a challenge today to make a living as a musician. It has been even more difficult in the 18th century, when there was like no insurance whatsoever, insurance policy. And for a composer like Boismortier, not as a performer, but as a composer, to make a living was something totally out of the ordinary. So he was the first composer in France who managed to do that without being employed by either church or the court or private donors. He made his fortune on his own. Telemann would be the equivalent in Germany, but he still had a job and with the church. So it's something that and in itself, it's a huge life achievement. And by the way, he also was a very charming gentleman. So people just loved dealing with him. So he was very successful on various levels. Now, for his music, as one might say, the music tries to stay away from structures that are too complex, from music that is too difficult to play, because it, of course, had to please, or else people would not buy the music. However, in the context of the opera Don Quixote, that does not apply because the music was written for highly specialized and very well-trained musicians that played in the opera in Paris. So they were the finest musicians of the country. And so he could really let himself go. It was not the game was, the goal was not to sell as many copies as possible. The goal was to be successful with an audience that would appreciate crazy opera. And he delivered. He delivered 150%.
Yeah, that's great. And I saw too that Ensemble Caprice is actually releasing a recording of the opera, which I believe is out today, the day we're recording this, on Atma Klassik.
What a coincidence.
I know, yeah.
And, so we are lucky that we could actually get both events and one at the same time, which is great. Yeah,
was that planned, the album release and the concert together? Was that just a happy coincidence?
It turns out that this opera has accompanied us through the pandemic. So it was part of a project that Ensemble Caprice did together with a company and a music group in Terrebonne. And it was our first version was sort of for outdoors performance during the pandemic with social distancing and the whole stuff. It was so difficult. So during that time, the idea was born because we were all just carried away by this music. We have to do something with it. First of all, that we incorporated into our own concert series here at Bursche Hall, and at the same time do a recording. And what we did on the recording, we chose all the instrumental pieces, airs and divertissements, dances and chaconne and a majestic overture. And also all the airs, the arias that the different characters sing. So we basically we leave out the recitative, which is more like the storytelling, because it's a CD, so it's more like the musical event itself. So we have compiled, I would say it's a good 80% of the opera is on that CD. Again, it's not very long, the opera. And so it's sort of the best of is on the CD. And I have to say, I'm very happy about the result.
That's great. Yeah. And I read, too, that the recording was transcribed from the original manuscript in versus the engraved version. What made you want to go with that version instead of the engraved one?
Yeah, really very well informed. Yes, it turns out there are two different versions in the Paris in the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, and the one version has been used for a project in France. It was also recorded, so we thought, hey, this is interesting. Let's see, let's have a look at the other version. It turns out that the version that we recorded is sort of the first one, and has there are some discrepancies. It's nothing really major, but yeah, it's different enough that it's. And so, again, so very well crafted that we decided to go with this version.
Great, yeah. And the pre-release single for the album was from Act One, the March and the Chorus of the Shepherds. I was just curious why that selection. Do you think it kind of signifies the like something important about the opera?
It turns out that there are instrumental pieces, there are arias, and there are a couple of ensemble pieces. And we chose one of those ensemble pieces that really fit the bill with according to the length and according also to this great musical motif that Beaumartier comes up with for that particular march. And you listen to it, and for me, this is something like, it's clear that if the entire opera is like that, it must be really outstanding. And luckily for all of us, it turns out to be the case.
Yeah, exactly. And you talked earlier about how you performed the opera, like, you know, during the pandemic, sort of outside social distancing. So how does it feel to like sort of bring that back now that you've recorded it and now we're bringing it into, you know, just sort of like the concert setting again? Do you feel like you've gone on a sort of a journey with this work?
It, as a musician, if you think or look back to the pandemic, we did we started doing lots of music outdoors, and the first thing that I liked about outdoors, and you're in touch with people and it's really great fun. But as a musician, there's one thing you are missing, which is the beauty of the sound. A concert hall is such an important element of the musical experience, because it will transform the sound, and depending on which hall you're playing in, it will change the sound. And I have to say, that's the one element that I really missed, that performing under circumstances where sort of the best of is just coming out because of the hall and the acoustics. And now to be able to do this at Bourget Hall, such a beautiful hall downtown Montreal, that's of course a great thing. And we are very much looking forward to finally bring this chef d'oeuvre into concert hall.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that space is like, you know, it's small enough that it can really resonate in terms of like, you know, being, you know, a concert version rather than a stage version. Is there any sort of light staging, or is it more just focused on the musical aspect?
It's a concert version, so it's certainly focusing on the musical aspects. Now, here's the thing, that all the singers, by nature, they are operatic singers. So you sing the music, but of course you also play it out. And often you don't really need like a stage or staging with backdrops and the whole stuff. It's more something that you give ideas, and all of a sudden you see the character, like Don Quixote, he's standing there, but you see him sitting on his horse, and you know, that kind of, when you appeal to imagination, miracles are possible. And we try to ride this wave next Sunday, or on the 28th.
Absolutely. Well, Matthias, thank you so much for joining me today, and enjoy the performance on Sunday.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
Présenté par SiriusXM, le festival déjanté de musique alternative Le Fuck Off est de retour pour sa 10e année consécutive. Du 9 au 17 février, la ville de Québec sera animée par des spectacles et des vitrines de musique émergente de tout genre confondus. Procure-toi ton billet et viens découvrir des artistes éclatés comme Teke Teke, Catashaw, Solipsisme, C'est Nicole, Population 2, Totalement Sublime, Virginie B et plus encore. Le Fuck Off, c'est le festival qui réchauffe ton mois de février. Visite le phoqueoff.com pour plus d'informations.
In mid-October 2023, Quebec's government announced that they will be manually increasing English university tuition rates for out-of-province and international students starting in fall 2024. Originally, the Minister of Education attempted to double tuition rates. But because of student and administration pushback, the hike was reduced to only 30%. Wait, hold on. Only 30%? That's $12,000 for out-of-province students, and still a minimum of $20,000 for international students. We don't have that kind of money.
This tremendous tuition hike impacts all Concordia students, regardless if your tuition is getting hiked or not. Concordia will be losing money from a projected lower enrollment rate, resulting in class cancellations, department closures, and fewer funds for extracurricular funtivities. This will even impact Montreal's businesses with a deepening of the labor shortage and shrinking customer base, because there will be a 60% decrease in students coming to Quebec.
Does this make you frustrated? Yeah, it should. Students are mobilizing to fight against the tuition hikes using the symbol of the Red Square, popularized during the impactful 2012 student strikes. Red Squares are available outside the CSU office in the Hall Building for you and your friends. Follow the Instagram at StudentsQuebec to learn more about future direct actions and student strikes. Together, we can stop the hikes and demand free education for all.
Welcome back to CJLO 1690, and this is Cadenza Montreal. It was a great opportunity to speak with Matthias Mauta earlier. And that performance, again, is at Salle Borgie this weekend on Sunday at 2:30 p.m., where they will perform the concert version of that opera. And the new CD release can be found through the Quebec label Atma Classique. So there's another concert I noticed coming up at Salle Borgie tomorrow. It's one of their performances that's in connection with the exhibitions at the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts. And it's part of their series of concerts that's paying tribute to Rachel Laurent, who is a Quebec native composer, and who unfortunately passed away last August unexpectedly. She would have been Salle Borgie's first composer in residence during the 2023-2024 season. So there have been concerts featuring her works. She led a very interesting career, both as a concert organist, but also a prolific composer. And her death was quite a shock. So I was looking through some recordings of her work, again, very prolific, both for her personal instrument of organ, but also for all sorts of instrumental combinations. I found this really interesting recording of her trio for flute, viola, and piano, Opus 17. This is from an album completely of her music called Rachel Laurent Festivals. And so I thought that I would share this, the first movement of this trio. I feel like the combination of flute, viola, and piano is just so beautiful. So this is violist Véronique Potvin, flutist Michel Balavance, and pianist Marc Bordeaux.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CJLO 1690. That was the first movement, Allegro ma non troppo, from the trio for flute, viola, and piano from Quebec composer Rachel Laron. The musicians there were violist Véronique Potvin, flutist Michel Vallavance, and pianist Marc Bordeaux. So tomorrow night at Salmorgi, the Molinari String Quartet will be playing Rachel Laron's poem for String Quartet Opus 35. This is part of their program of music of the 20th and 21st centuries, and specifically this program is celebrating compositions that were composed in Quebec specifically. And speaking of works called poem, Rachel Laron also composed plenty of works for organ, of which she was a very talented organ player. And this next selection I have here is her symphonic poem for the Advent season for organ. This is the recording by Aaron Tan, organist, on his album De la Lumière aux Étoiles, From the Light to the Stars. And I think it's just a wonderful piece and very, very creative in terms of what the organ can do. So this is Aaron Tan.
Are you a student interested in giving yoga a try? For just $60, new students can discover the joys of movement and harmony with unlimited access to classes at Moda Yoga Montreal. Located in the heart of the plateau, the Moda Yoga Studio offers a variety of hot yoga classes with something to match every ability level. They're good to find your flow or just recharge. Karma classes excluded, and the offer renews automatically after 1 month at $139 per month. Can be canceled at any time without penalty up to 1 week before the renewal. Moda Yoga Montreal is located at 3863 Saint Laurent Boulevard, and for more information, you can go to modayogamontreal.com.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CGLO 1690. Before the break, there was the symphonic poem for the Advent season by Quebec composer Richard Laurent, performed there by organist Aaron Tan. I think that something I really enjoy about doing this program is how I've learned about so many amazing Canadian and Quebecois women composers. I think that when it comes to North America, there's so much from the US, but there's some really amazing, wonderful music coming out of the Canadian classical music scene. And it's so devastating to hear about Rachel Laurent's passing in August 2023, but there are definitely her works are being remembered, as they are at Salle-Bourgie with this string quartet concert tomorrow, and then also there will be a performances of organ works coming up later in February. So as we start to wind down this week's episode, I thought I'd circle back around a little to play a little bit more of Ensemble Caprice. We could hear a little bit more of the opera recording, the Don Quixote chez la Duchesse. I thought I'd just play the overture for you, give you a little taste of what you will hear this week if you do decide to come to the concert. So this is the overture, the Joseph Baudin de Boismortier opera by Ensemble Caprice. Again, that was the overture to the opera Don Quixote chez la Duchesse by Ensemble Caprice there. And Ensemble Caprice is no stranger to recordings. That recording there is their most recent recording of an opera, but they've released plenty of albums in the past. And one particularly interesting selection from their earlier work that I found is La Folia by Andrea Falconeri. This is off their album called Chacon Voices of Eternity. There's some really virtuosic recorder playing in this, just fingers flying everywhere. It's like really fantastic. I think recorder is one of my really one of my favorite instruments, and I'll probably play some more recorder specific music one of these days, but this was a selection I particularly enjoyed when I went back to look over Ensemble Caprice's catalog of music. So this is La Folia by Andrea Falconeri. Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal here on CJLO 1690. That was La Folia by Andrea Falconeri, performed there by Ensemble Caprice under the direction of Matthias Mauta. That is just such a fun work, and the percussion especially adds a really vivacious energy to it. And of course, the recorder playing is just fantastic. And I was speaking earlier about going back through the catalog of Ensemble Caprice, and another artist who I've been going through the catalog of recently is the pianist Víkingur Ólafsson. After playing him on last week's show, he had a sold out, or has a sold out concert of the Bach Goldberg Variations, which I believe is tonight. And he also, like Ensemble Caprice, has recorded many albums, many, many albums. And there were just, since we have time here at the end of this program, I thought I'd just play some of my selections that I found with going through. The first is the Philip Glass Etude No. 13 from his album of Philip Glass Piano Works. And the next is from his debut album all the way back in 2009, a beautiful waltz by Johannes Brahms, number 15 in A flat major. So thanks again for tuning in this week for this week's edition of Cadenza Montreal. Hope to see you next week, and enjoy pianist Víkingur Ólafsson.